The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, longtime supporters of all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com. It's the Made to Move sales event going on right now at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, right there at Causeway Boulevard. So easy to get to. The 2019 Cadillac CTS, $343 lease per month. New 2019 Cadillac Escalade, $749 lease per month. All the details are at Ed Morse CadillacBrandon.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, and as all Ed Morse customers know, their quality runs across the state of Florida for 73-plus years, more than 1.2 million satisfied customers, and at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, the signature showroom just west of 275 on Fletcher.
Hold on. I want to stop you right here, and I think it's worth noting. The Tampa dealership, this is worth mentioning. Brian is the general manager. He's been there 8 years. Each of the last 2 years, that dealership has been honored by the Cadillac company in general, the overseer, as one of the top 20 dealerships in the world. And I didn't say United States. I said the world. 920 dealerships, that's about 2%. That is very impressive. 2% among all dealerships get that designation. That guy got it 2 years in a row. Brian, you're doing something right over there. Ed Morse, Cadillac, Tampa, Fletcher Avenue, a little west of 275.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. All right, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is back for the first podcast of this week as we march toward training camp. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper is here. Zach Seifter, but the man of the hour, the king, the lean, mean fighting machine, Brooklyn's finest, Mr. Ira Kaufman. How are you, Ira?
I'm doing well, my friend. Two more weeks. It's a chance, Ellie. And what happened in 2 weeks? Buck rookies report. Followed quickly by Buck veterans. And 4 o'clock practices, people. That means you working stiffs out there. You might be able to sneak out and catch the end of practice.
Like Roy Cummings.
Like Roy. Oh, see, you see, Steve, we're not a minute into the podcast. Steve, Lee, and he's taking pot shots. Roy is a member of the working community. There's nothing wrong with that. And he re-scrambled just like I did. And he reinvented himself, Lee. You can't piss on a man that Lee. Every podcast I'm saying piss on. I got there's some kind of a phobia going
jellyfish.
On.
Jellyfish.
Jellyfish, yeah.
But so this is the ninth. And in 2 weeks, you're talking about 2 weeks?
2 weeks, rookies report.
I'm just talking about tomorrow night.
July 10th. What's going on July 10th?
I will be in Las Vegas.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's the day after the All-Star game, I believe.
This could be.
I'm not going there for the All-Star game.
I understand. You're going to Vegas?
That happens.
Lee, you're everywhere. You traveled last week. You're traveling next week.
This could be Lee's last podcast.
It could be. I could die. I very well could die in Las Vegas.
I'm trying to get the loots over
and
here.
And that's the way one dies. If someone's dying happy.
Where are you going? Caesars?
I believe I'll be at Mirage.
Are you going to go to the Las Vegas Sportsbook, the Hilton? Westgate. Could you see my man Jay Cornegay if you go to Westgate?
If he wants to talk to me, sure, I'd love to talk to him. But that's the Westgate. Correct name, Ira. Westgate.
You're right.
By the way, what was that hotel? Since you're talking about old names, what was that hotel?
Oh, it wasn't the Las Vegas Hilton, no.
At one time it was.
Okay.
And what was that? What was that famous for, Las Vegas Hilton? What was that famous for?
Sinatra punched a guy?
You're close.
Sinatra was punched by a guy.
Not Sinatra. It's not Sinatra.
Oh.
What icon in Vegas?
Shecky Green.
You read my Twitter. No.
Who?
That was Elvis's place.
Oh.
That was Elvis's place.
I think they might have filmed the concert over there.
I'm sure they did. That was his place.
All right, Ira, we're going to get right after it. We got a lot of Bucks meat on the buffet here as we sit here at Buffalo Wild Wings.
I thought this is the middle of summer. Nothing going on with the Bucks.
Oh, come on, Ira. That's for other outfits.
Take
bored.
The summer off.
Take a siesta and just relax.
No siestas for us, Ira. Not even in Vegas. I will have my laptop with me. I'll have you know.
That's outstanding.
Lee might be shooting video as well.
Well, I think that could be illegal. states.
If you read a Thomas Bassinger tweet that you don't like, you might do something about it.
No, I like Tom.
We do like Tom. We do like Tom.
All right, Ira.
Sometimes he gets over his skis a little bit, but we do like Tom.
You typed up a list in defiance to Chris Sims, who you ripped.
Oh.
Florio loves to smack him around, so now it's my turn to smack around. Chris, I don't take this the wrong way. I love you. you're missing a spleen. But some of the things you've been saying, you're missing half your brain. Sims, what are you doing? Tom Brady, number 9. Are you crazy?
And you decided you were going to put out your own list of top 25 quarterbacks, the official Ira Kaufman list, the Sage list. I'm going to send this to Sims myself, actually. And what's interesting, Ira, I'm going to run down the names in a hurry for those who are foolish and didn't read your column. Now, I'm going to fire away, and then you can react. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Andrew Luck checking in at number 5, Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson, Cam Newton at number 13, Kirk Cousins at number 14, Baker Mayfield, Dak Prescott, Jimmy Garoppolo, number 17, 18, Derek Carr, 19, Nick Foles. Oh, congratulations, Jameis Winston at number 20, followed by Mitch Trubisky, Eli Manning, Matt Stafford, Andy Dalton at number 25, Marcus Mariota.
And each Ira, man is accompanied by a comment, a pithy comment.
Yes,
pithy.
You don't just give the list, you give a whole column on it. Now, is there a criteria that you can enlighten us on here, Sage?
Well, the first thing you realize, young Zach, is that age doesn't matter to yours truly. The Sage isn't counting that how many candles are on Tom Brady's birthday cake. He happens to be in the habit of winning freaking Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. He ripped the Chargers to shreds. He ripped the Chiefs to shreds on the way. Now, they won the Super Bowl basically on defense, but Brady didn't make any mistakes and didn't screw up, which Jared Goff did. How can Brady not be number one? Lee, I don't understand.
Was that Chris Sims' criteria? One of his criteria was candles? Well, I'm not being sarcastic.
I mean, it's the only thing I can think of. Why would you put Brees 9 and 10? I'm surprised he snuck Brady into the top 10. I'm surprised he didn't put him at 20. And we like Chris Sims.
Yeah.
I mean, he's missing a spleen, but he's got backbone.
And a pair of something else.
If he wanted to get clicks, Lee, he succeeded. That's gotten a lot of play. So today I had to put him in his place over there. Leave it to Steve. He's going to send it to Pro Football Talk, and maybe they'll use it. Who knows?
Zach, you heard that list. I want you to challenge the Sage here. Garner some wisdom.
Would you put Aaron Rodgers number 1, Zach?
I would definitely not put Russell Wilson at 8. I'd put him in the top 5, probably.
Okay.
Guy's a Super Bowl ring. Andrew Luck certainly doesn't.
Why don't you give the comment for Winston to our fans over there?
It didn't excite me too much, Ira. Aww. So I'm going to go with this. Kirk Cousins at 14. You got Jameis at 20. Lee, your reaction before Ira bloviates on this topic.
Yeah, I thought Kirk Cousins was a little bit high. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback, but he really hasn't put a team on his back, I don't think. That, to me, is part of a career. Can you put a team on your back and go somewhere? Kirk Cousins had, what, one playoff appearance? He didn't get Minnesota there last year. He had one playoff appearance with the Redskins. But, come to think of it, there was the almighty, what, I can't think of what he screamed after the Bucks.
You like
the
that?
Bucks. Yeah, you like that. Yep. So maybe him creating a meme, is that the proper pronunciation?
That is, yes,
maybe
meme.
Creating, because I always pronounced it meme. I never heard anybody vocalize it, so I thought, okay, it's meme, it's French.
Steven, were you aware, Mr. Isbitz, were you aware that Kirk Cousins completed 70% of his passes last year?
I am, Ira, I understand, and that was...
Didn't have a good running game. Dalvin Cook's not on track yet.
Tavius Murray's a nice running back, though.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay.
And he had
He's got some good receivers.
He does. And a very good tight end, too.
And he had two offensive coordinators during the season, which makes things difficult.
I got him as middle of the pack, Lee. 14,
which is all right, That's not outrageous.
I have a theory. My theory, when I read this, my thought was his famous, you like that phrase. I've seen you scream that at Rick Stroud at least 3 times. So I thought that's why you had him up to 14.
Well, that's after he read one of my columns. You like that. But Jameis at 20, Lee, by the end of this year, if he wants to get that darn extension, he's got to get higher than 20 on my list. He just does.
Well, two things.
Sims had him at 27.
You have him ranked at 20. I think, isn't that his salary, 20th?
That might be.
Now, you talk about Jameis and his next contract.
And by the way, that's right. And no Buck quarterback that they drafted has ever gotten a second contract with the Buccaneers.
And if Jameis is that next in line that doesn't do that, I think Metallica wrote a song about this. It's a day that never comes.
This is more than 4 decades of NFL football, Lee. Yeah. Never happened.
A day that never comes. A Bucs quarterback gets the second contract.
How could that happen?
You almost have to try.
I mean, Doug Williams with the contract dispute. He's the guy that had a chance after Doug Williams. What do we got? Vinny?
Steve.
You know, and Vinny went on and had a very good career elsewhere. Didn't
yes,
he?
Yes,
he did.
Yes.
You had Dilfer.
Steve Young, who, by the way, won a grand total of 3 games.
Boy.
And he traded the Hall of Famer away.
The great Bill Walsh saw something in Steve Young. Now, he was a very good player in the USFL, but that's the USFL. Yeah. He showed absolutely nothing as a Buck. He never got much of a chance.
He didn't have any coaching.
And Bill Walsh says, we want that guy.
Yeah.
What'd they give him, a second-round pick?
Second-round pick. And Steve
a
Young.
A second-round pick for a guy who'd never done nothing in the NFL.
Steve Young, I watched the Bill Walsh documentary they had on NFL Network a couple years ago, and it's available on YouTube.
These documentaries are fantastic.
They are. But Steve Young was saying he was basically going from darkness to sunlight with Bill Walsh. He said Walsh was teaching him stuff he never dreamed
before.
But
he got frustrated sitting behind Montana.
Very much so. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I'm just saying that he had no coaching. The way he talked about it, he had no coaching with the Bucks.
By the way, speaking of lists, I got 3 very smart men here. Let me just throw this out.
Well, not me.
Let me throw this out and go around the table quickly. I just saw one of those top 10s. By the way, gentlemen, I used to be on those top 10 NFL films.
Right? All the
time. They had me down one time, and it was like, guys, you love to hate. And I'm sitting down there, and they say, hey, we got Warren Sapp listed at number 10. This was an ad lib by me. I didn't know what they were going to say. They go, hey, Ira, we got Sapp at number 10. I said, who's ahead of him, Attila the Hun?
And they
it was a good line. And now they're going with comedians and starlets.
Well, they still did back then,
too. I can't fill out a sweater like some of these people that they got. Well, anyway, I just saw a top 10 greatest NFL teams ever. Greatest NFL teams. The number one team was the 89 49ers.
89.
The one that carved up the Broncos in the Super Bowl.
Oh, my gosh.
What was the final score of that game?
That game was in New Orleans, and I went because I was still working for UPI, and I wrote, the main column, and they won 55 to something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
55 to like 10, something like that.
Like 5 minutes into the game, Jerry Rice, you know, did a slant. He was open by 20 yards. That's impossible.
Oof.
You don't cover Jerry Rice. Boom. 50-yard pass. Game was over. So I wrote one of my best leads for UPI. My lead of my story was, in an era of parity, the 49ers represent purity.
Ooh, good one.
There you go.
That's
right
a good
there.
One.
Anyway, I'm going around this table. Who's the number one NFL team of all time? Lee, could it be the 85 Bears? Could it be? They killed people.
Yeah.
They killed people. Where would you put the unbeaten Patriots in the regular season that lost to the Giants? Would they be in your top 10, even though they didn't win the Super Bowl?
Maybe, but they wouldn't be. I mean, I'd have to think about this hard, but when you say best team ever, obviously the Steelers spring to mind. 70 Steelers, that is.
Would the 02 Bucks be in consideration? Would it be in consideration?
No.
Or would you say their offense wasn't good enough?
No, offense wasn't good enough. But I would, without actually thinking hard about this, off the top of my head, I would say the 78 Steelers.
They were on the list. They were number 2, I believe.
Well, they had, a 3-touchdown lead on the Cowboys, who were damn good.
With Staubach.
It wasn't like the 49ers took apart the Broncos.
That was a great Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was. But it speaks to Staubach. He brought them back.
He did.
They were dead. He brought them back. And that was the Jackie Smith game where he dropped the ball. Otherwise, they may have won that game, may have come back. But, yeah, the Cowboys were dominant that year. It wasn't the Broncos like, they're okay. No, the Cowboys were very good. And the Steelers picked them apart for the first 3 quarters until Staubach brought them back. I would say that off the top of my head, that team, because of who they beat.
And I had to pick a Packer team. They picked the 62 Packers pre-Super Bowl. That team was loaded. Zach, what's the best team in your memory of watching NFL that stands in your mind?
NFL
football?
This
is a dominant team. A dominant team. The Rams team with Warner.
Greatest show on turf. A damn good football team.
They were very good 2 years later when they lost to the Patriots.
But their defense was so-so.
What were they, 14-point favorites in that Super Bowl over the Patriots?
I think so.
They might have been.
A team that really, I mean, if I'm thinking of teams that were really balanced on both sides of the ball, I'm thinking about the Steelers of the mid-2000s. One of the top defenses in the league, consistently year in, year out. And then you think about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously. But another team that was really, really good, the 2013 Seahawks. Good on the defensive side of the ball. You got Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch.
Not bad.
Doug Baldwin. Very good football team, the 20. And they destroyed the best offense in the league in the Super Bowl.
And they should have repeated. And they should have repeated.
Just hand the ball off on the 1 yard
line. Steve, you want to throw your hat in the ring?
Well, there's so many to choose from, Ira.
Name us the Jets.
Oh, they had the 68. They had the 68 Colts, the team that the Jets beat.
Oh, is that
because
that
they were fantastic? They had a fantastic team.
So many to choose from. I'm going to go a different direction. One for the sake of the podcast, and two because if I really have to say it, I'll say we'll never see a team like this again. So I'll use that for the threshold. The 2000 Ravens. Four games in the playoffs, they allowed 23 points. We'll never see that again, Ira. Four games, 23 points. They closed the year on a big winning streak with extreme dominance. We'll never see it again. And so I think some of these other types of teams you might, but I'll go with that.
They had a good running back. Quarterback was not very good. Tremendous defense, Lee. All-time defense.
23 points, four playoff games.
How many points did the Bears give up in three games?
Not many.
12?
It might have been 10.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
a fantastic performance. Yeah. Fantastic.
The 85 Bears?
85 Bears.
I'm thinking in three playoff games, they gave up 12 points off the top of my head. Because I don't think the Rams got double digits on
it. Killed the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Walter Payton was pissed because he didn't get it because the fridge stole his rushing touchdown.
That to me.
They might have played the Niners.
That story. They played the Niners. The Niners didn't do anything. That Walter Payton story, I think, really tarnishes his image. And he comes across as a spoiled brat.
Steve, did they play the Giants?
Yeah. 10 points, three games.
10 points in three games.
Wow. And those are some good quarterbacks. Phil Simms? Well, one good quarterback. Patriots had what, Tony Eason? Well,
it was the year before the Giants won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great teams.
Dieter Brock.
Do you have a problem with Brady and Breeze topping my list, Steven? Brady and Breeze?
No, of course not, Ira. These lists are fun. I just, Kirk Cousins, I had to pick something out of there. Jameis sitting at 20. I would put him more like 16, 17.
Okay.
But, you know, it's still middle of the pack.
Would you put Jameis ahead of Derek Carr?
Yes.
Zach? Derek Carr? I won't argue with you, Lee.
I would put Carr ahead.
I had Carr ahead.
Carr's more consistent.
I don't think he's long for Chucky, though. I think Chucky will turn on him.
Carr doesn't get hurt
in 2016. Like I always say about Chucky.
If he doesn't get the job done with Antonio Brown, Chucky will turn on him.
Carr doesn't get hurt in 2016. That team might have had a first-round bye.
Yeah, it's true. I always say this.
Remember what he did against the Bucks? Boy, it was over 500 yards. That was unbelievable.
Lovey.
Back-to-back games, too. It was the Raiders game and then the Falcons game. Back-to-back 500-yard games, wasn't it?
Who was it that had a penalty for the Bucks that would have been a game-winning defensive stand?
It was Judah J. Barima.
Hey, Jude.
It was defensive holding on fourth and goal.
Well said, Zach. That was the year the Bucks ripped off a five-game winning streak and played good defense.
Yeah.
The same year.
I think I'd put Carr ahead. Just looking it up here, he's averaged.
That wasn't Lovey, huh? That was Mike Smith?
Yeah, that was part of the that heinous 3-5 opening stretch. Oof. And then they turned it around. Derek Carr has averaged only 10 interceptions a year. I think that's the difference.
That is the difference.
Right there.
You know what I always say about Chucky, don't you? He loves you as a quarterback. Until you play for him.
That's good. A quick trivia question, Steve. Quick. Ready. Zach, you're first.
All right.
Who threw the most interceptions in the National Football League last season? Number was 16.
Oh, boy. 16?
Guy's going to the Hall of Fame.
Is it Ben Roethlisberger?
That's why he is the manic intern that we all love over here.
Is that outstanding? Is that a compliment? Fantastic. Manic?
Well, manic means, you know, he's got a lot of energy.
Outstanding, Zach. And, Sage, this brings us to Super Bowl tangent that you took us down. Brings us to Dexter Jackson, the Buccaneers Super Bowl MVP. Now, Zach had a long conversation with him recently. Zach, tell us what he talked about as far as coaching the Bucs. He's been chatting with Todd Bowles. He's been looking at the roster. What's going on?
How'd you run into him, Zach?
Well, he was out there at Skyway Park. He was training a couple guys, a couple undrafted guys going into their first NFL training camp.
Yeah, some guys come down. You look like
you're still in shape, Zach? Yo, he's great shape. Dexter Jackson looks great. He looked fantastic. But Dexter, I found him out on the field, and I asked for a couple minutes, and he gave me more than a few minutes, actually. So talked about a lot about, you know, training in the heat, what he's been doing. I guess he was coaching at Alabama State.
Ah.
And then he came back to Tampa to be with his kids and all that. But he's going to be out at training camp. He said he personally reached out to Bruce Arians to come out there and be a part of the practices out.
As far as we know, Bruce Arians has no connection to Dexter Jackson, except that he's a Buck alumni.
He's had contact with the coaching staff, watched film twice with Todd Bowles already. So he's,
does he like some of these young buck secondary guys?
He does. He does. He told me, he's like, I called two of their names at the draft. I like him, though. So he's optimistic. He said it needed to be done. He said it needed to happen with the way that the secondary was last year. It needed to happen.
Wow. Zach, when you approached him, Zach, how did he identify himself?
I came up to him and he's like, he identified himself as MVP.
You
his
know
words.
Once you got that, you never take it away.
And that's the way you should be introducing yourself, Irish. Sage. But Lee, what do you make of that? Todd Bowles inviting Dexter Jackson in for already two film sessions. And Zach, hearing from Dexter Jackson himself, the Bucks needed to draft the secondary guys that they did. This is very telling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't like the Bucks draft. But as I wrote recently, about a week or so ago, it's pretty obvious that, and I've been saying this for months, that Todd Bowles looked at the film of last year, went to Bruce Arians, like, there's no way in hell I can compete with these corners. We got to have new corners. So, you know, I didn't like the Bucks draft because of not who they drafted, but the positions they drafted. I don't dislike any of the guys. I just thought they should have drafted different positions. But this just tells me another piece of information that reinforces the fact that the Bucks thought their secondary stunk, whether it be safety, whether it be corners.
I dare say Jackson is not the only former Buck that we will see out there and the fans will see out there in training camp. I think it's an intriguing list that Arians has at his disposal, should he go that way.
Well, we heard on Zach's interview on your podcast with Derek Brooks, Brooks said that Arians asked him to be the sort of the recruiter-in-chief, and Brooks joked that, hey, I'll be out there and I may want to sign a new contract. And so
haven't we talked, Lee? Now, look, Lee's made the point, and I don't argue your point, Lee, that Brooks doesn't have a lot of experience in football management. Every time I bring his name up, hey, the Bucks better get sign up Derek Brooks. But the point that Steve and I think, have made to you in the past is he can be a hell of a recruiter. And then all of a sudden, boom, that's the word that Steve uses. Derek Brooks, Lee, and you know this for a fact, for a guy who's been out of football for a decade, mm-hmm. he still has a lot of cachet with young players. There's something about Brooks.
Well, he's a Hall
they
of Famer.
All know Brooks.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer, number one.
And,
number two, he also is the conduit between NFLPA and NFL when it comes to fines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he keeps his name active.
And Steve, the Bucks might need all the help they can get in terms of luring free agents, because sometimes we hear that this is not a great destination, considered a great NFL destination. I think Brooks can help in that regard.
Well, it's an interesting balancing act because he's acting as sort of a neutral party between the NFLPA mm-hmm. and the league in this appeals officer role. So I don't think he can really go crazy public recruiting, but he stays in touch with Jameis. He's in Lavonte David's ear. He's in other players' ears.
Devin White, obviously, they had to sit
that's
down.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
that's
he spent
right.
time with Devin White. And Brooks now is invested in a minor league baseball franchise up in Pensacola. I don't know if you know that.
Boy, so he's got a lot of stuff going.
So he's been getting more involved with the business side of a lot of sports types of things. He had his run with the Tampa Bay Lightning, Tampa Bay Storm group, and, of course, he's wisely keeping his foot in media with you, Ira, on the Tampa 2 show, the Identity Tampa Bay and Joe Bucks fan. But I just think it's interesting that Arians is really embracing these players, whereas it was all talk before with Lovey and Shiano and whatever. But here it seems real. Like, he wants, come on in. I already have 33 coaches. Come on in. Let's get some more.
Can you see big number 99 wandering the fields at $1?
I expect it. Lee. Not can I expect it. He's wanting to get in the
coaching. Now, what about when he comes face-to-face with big Ndamukong Suh? He hasn't always been a big Suh fan in the past.
Like, well, you know, it seems like those guys have respect for what you're talking about with Brooks. Those guys have respect for Sapp. I can't remember who it was. Might have been Deshaun Golson. And this has been years ago, of course. And he wasn't around when Sapp played. But I asked him something about Sapp. Sapp had something about Golson on NFL Network. And Golson was like, oh, my gosh, that guy talked about me that way, in a good way. And he was unbelievably humbled that someone like Sapp would say something good about him. So there's your word, gravitas.
Gravitas.
Used it in a previous podcast.
Steve, we've seen Simeon Rice wander around and work with Noah Spence.
Right? Are there two more different personalities than Ndamukong Suh and Warren Sapp? Are these guys?
Yeah.
You know, it'll be a very interesting, and Bruce Arians did confirm that Sapp will be there. You know, you brought it up before with the secondary, and it made me think something I forgot to talk about on previous podcasts. in my mind, we went through the entire spring and we never heard Carlton Davis's name, never really stood out. And, Zach just talking about the secondary and what Lee talked about and Dexter Jackson. Are you all getting the same vibe?
Well, we heard about Mike Edwards a lot, about how smart he is, how versatile he is, corner, nickel, safety. We heard about Hargraves, not always in a
lot positive about Hargraves.
Sense.
Mix and match.
But Steve makes an interesting point about Carlton Davis. I still expect him to start opposite Hargraves on the outside corner. I still expect it. I thought he had a decent rookie year. Zach, what'd you think of Carlton
Davis? I mean,
Davis?
He wasn't atrocious.
I thought he was playing out of position in terms of the scheme that they asked him to play.
I would agree. I would say he's more of a – at Auburn, he was more known as a press guy. And obviously, you know, Mike Smith is sitting there having guys line up 15 yards off Julio Jones.
Arians likes big corners, Steve. You know that. He said it many times. Carlton Davis is a big corner. Mm-hmm. He's got the size that Arians likes.
He doesn't have the speed of the other guys. I don't know. I might take that bet that he doesn't start on opening day. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's too early.
I'm not anti-Carlton Davis. I thought, like you guys, he wasn't atrocious. He showed some promise. But still, he was a starter on a defense that got lit up more than a barbecue on 4th of July.
No question about it.
You got to love Zach's analysis. How do you break down Carlton Davis, Zach? He wasn't atrocious. Zach fits right in. This is fantastic.
Well, the defense was atrocious.
All right, now, yeah. Ira, you wrote a column about Joe Gilbert going back, and now he's the Buccaneers' offensive line coach. Guy was a train wreck with the Colts after a good start. And, of course, Harold Goodwin is the supposed
run game coordinator, overseer
of all things offensive line. But, look, Gilbert's the guy teaching day to day. And what point did you really want to make there? And then we all have a couple of points about Gilbert.
Well, my point, I think, is that Gilbert is a guy, Lee, that has to get more out of the talent that is afforded him up front. And by that, I mean, I don't think these guys have maxed out. I'll start with Donovan Smith. Lee, he's middle of the pack. I can't blame the Bucks for paying him because you got to have a better option if you don't want to pay the guy. But, Lee, he's not elite. He's not top 10. Marpet, probably the best of the bunch, but I don't see him as a perennial Pro Bowler at this point.
You won't be doing an induction speech for him.
And Jensen, I don't think has lived up to his contract.
No.
Right guard's a mess. So I think Gilbert's got some heavy lifting to do. I said the Buck fans could be calling him Hercules by the end of the year because he's got some heavy lifting to do, Lee.
Yeah.
There's a lot of improvement that needs to.
Well, I'm going to say this and I'll probably get in trouble for saying it. I'm going to say it anyway. Donovan Smith was putting up a bunch of plays that he was proud of. You know, plays from the last couple seasons, putting them up on Instagram. And the plays he was putting up on initial contact, he was blowing people up. I mean, we're talking about a man playing with a child. Literally tossing people.
Out of his pass blocking situation?
Most pass, some run. I mean, he was just tossing people. And while he was putting these up as highlights, and again, I emphasize his initial contact. Initial point of contact, he was destroying people. However,
these are plays that he's particularly proud of.
Yeah, because he uploaded them on Instagram. But there were a couple of those plays where he has a reputation, whether valid or not, he has a reputation of not playing to the whistle. A couple of those plays, if he did play to the whistle, he would have blown up more than one guy. And one in particular, I had to laugh out loud. One, I mean, Donovan Smith just tossed a guy about 5 yards away. And he was just standing there, And a linebacker or a lineman came in on a loop and actually made contact with Donovan. And Donovan kind of like patty caked him, just barely touched his shoulder pad. Dude ran past Donovan Smith and chased Jameis out of the pocket. Like, Donovan, you would have clubbed this guy like you did the first guy. Jameis would have been in the pocket. Probably would have completed the pass.
Here's my point about Joe Gilbert. Tell me where I'm wrong. If you have a good ground game, to establish a good ground game, you got to have a couple of linemen that you know are going to get the job done that are reliable, and that's your bread and butter play. Now, you look at the Buck offensive line, it's got
to
be left tackle, left guard.
Yeah,
you would think it has to be.
Yeah.
And I don't see where they've developed that, Steve.
They did that
third and two, I don't see that they have any faith that they're going to get the job done running behind these guys. I don't see it.
Well, you know, you always bring this up about when Cutter was an offensive coordinator and the Bucks ran well. They ran to the left side. Yeah, Mankins was there. I get that. But so was Donovan Smith.
Now, Steve, you wrote something up on Joe Gilbert. What'd you come up
yeah,
with?
Yeah, I was, you know, doing what a man does on a Saturday night. I was researching Joe Gilbert and his history and trying to figure out why he's even here.
You should be taking your wife to Burns. Never mind looking up Joe Gilbert.
So here I find an interview with Gilbert when he arrived at the University of Arizona last year, talking on a lot of topics, and somebody asked him about coaching in the NFL versus coaching in college, and he had a few answers, but one answer that really stuck out to me was Gilbert saying that in the NFL, he learned that you can't just come in and tell guys, here's how we're going to do it, because there are a lot of veterans and guys who've been doing things their own way, and you got to sort of be gentle and figure it out.
And finesse it.
And there are veterans who, you know, that they're not going to just listen to you when you say, this is how we do it. And it set off a red flag to me, Ira. While that may be Joe Gilbert's reality, to me, it's like, don't you think a lot of coaches come in, successful coaches come in and say, here's how we do it. Here's how I coach this, because Harold Goodwin likes it done this way. This is the Bruce Arians way. This is how we do it now. And we're going to start learning it. And here we are in April.
You know how you get away with that kind of attitude? When you're coming into a situation with a very successful offensive line, you don't think that way when you're coming in and you got to, you know, get the job done and find something that hasn't been materialized here since 2015. All of a sudden, you're worried about stepping on toes? Step on all the toes you want, Lee.
Here's all I'm going to say about Joe Gilbert. When he was coaching the Colts offensive line, they nearly had Andrew Luck crippled.
He was only the head O-line coach 3 years, and he was an assistant O-line coach 3 years.
Yeah, and Andrew Luck damn near was crippled. Had to have arm surgery. They didn't know if he was ever going to come back. Franchise quarterback.
Don't get Buck fans into a tizzy over
Well, there's some idiots out there who probably want to see that. I know where you're going. But like I said, I can only go by the man's resume. When he was in Indianapolis, his offensive line, number one, nearly got Andrew Luck crippled, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Number two, when Joe Gilbert left, that offensive line did a 180. Yeah, I know they drafted Quentin Nelson, but still, he's one guy, not five guys. That offensive line did a complete 180 after Gilbert left.
It's just an interesting little nugget, Ira, especially when you consider that everybody and their brother around the NFL says there isn't enough practice time, there isn't enough time to learn, and here's Gilbert coming in to a very veteran offensive line, sort of in it with a mindset of, I got to be careful with how I tell Dotson how to do this.
Now, Gilbert worked 1 year with Arians, right?
Correct.
Yeah, 2012.
Correct.
In Indy? Yeah, in Indy. Okay.
So we'll see. Look, maybe Harold Goodwin will be the guy here. I don't know. But it's just something, a philosophical thing that doesn't really feel very Arians-like. You know, Arians, a guy who he thinks can come in and say, this is how we do it, guys. You know, we're getting a ring and that's it. So,
but Gilbert, it's the only coach Arians brought in that I am very suspicious about.
Why do you think Arians didn't stick with Buckner? He had worked with Buckner.
We'll never know the truth. I assume that since he wasn't a Bulls guy. Now, Bulls did work with Buckner, and Bulls picked his guy.
That's why I'd heard. Also, if you think about it, he being Bulls wanted Casey Rogers as defensive line coach, so that was going to drop Buckner down a peg. Well, that's also a salary issue.
In some ways, Buckner did a credible job.
He didn't
do
a bad job. No, he did not.
All right, Ira, I wanted to throw one thing to your attention. This came up before, and it was rehashed by NJ.com, the beat writer up there, you know, one of the major newspapers covering the Eagles. And Vinnie Curry made some comments to local media during OTAs that being in Tampa was really one big, quote, long off season for him. And that he was always in touch all year long with his Eagles teammates. And that, you know, that's sort of where his heart was. And Tampa was just, it was just like something to do in the offseason. Meanwhile, the Bucs paid him $8 million. And obviously, his mentality wasn't right. Your thoughts? Do you think Jason Light's learned from this mistake?
Lee, once again, the words of Jason Light will haunt them forever. Mistakes in free agency are made from the neck up. Can't you get into the minds of these guys before you lavish all the money in the world on them? I'm not saying you need a psychiatrist, but try to figure out if the guy's committed or not. Is he committed to your team? It sounds like Vinnie Curry was coasting. What was he, on Ambien? Well, what's going on with this guy?
I got to say this right now, and you know I love Jason Light. He has to rely on people that do research. A general manager should not be the guy the doing the grunt work and research on these players. Isn't that the pro player personnel director's job? You, Ira Kaufman, knew more about freaking Swaggy Baker than the damn Bucks did. And apparently, this guy from NJ.com knew more about Vinnie Curry than the Bucks did. Who the hell's doing, or more pointedly, who the hell is not doing research on these players? I can't completely fault Jason Light for that because he shouldn't be doing the grunt work on the background of these
guys.
You've
got to get guys that are hungry, that are not coasting.
You got to do research. You've got to do research. Period. They do this on college players.
Vinnie Curry's mind was in Philadelphia, apparently.
Couldn't someone pick up the phone at Philadelphia and talk to, hey, what's Vinnie Curry like? I'm not going to say who, obviously, but a high-ranking Redskins official told you at the NFL's owners' meeting that Swaggy Baker was a lazy slob. And the Bucks apparently didn't know this. Why? I mean, this is a major
I've already identified him as Jake Gruden. I've already done it.
This
I've
is a major – well, see, I'm starting to cover it for you. Yeah.
This was a week after the Bucks got him.
I know. This is a major red flag for the Bucks organization. If I was the Glazers, I'd be asking some questions. Who the hell's not doing research around it? Who am I paying not to do a job?
When it happens time and again, Steve, there's a problem. There's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if – you know, and we've been through this, but it's July, and we can put a little more microscope on it. I'll put it out there this way, Ira.
You got to hope Bo Allen's not like
well,
that.
Well, Jason Light is close friends with Howie Roseman.
Very close.
They even have a family connection.
Very close.
And the reality is, Light made that phone call to Roseman, his trusted friend and former colleague.
You would hope.
You'd think. And said, you know, what am I getting in Bo Allen and Vinnie Curry? And, you know, done his own level of research there. And either he got conned or, you know, Roseman didn't really know what those guys were when they would leave. And then you look at the other guy they signed, Mitch Unrein. They signed a guy with a history of concussions to be a factor here. And he comes in and in practice he gets a concussion he's never heard from again. It just drives you nuts.
There's one other player Steve omitted from this vaunted list. Ghost Johnson.
Ghost Johnson.
Just like Vinnie Curry, his heart wasn't in Tampa.
Is Unrein in the league, Steve?
No. No, he's just not around anymore. So it's messy. All right, Sage, let me throw it over to Zach. He has a couple of important questions for you so he can learn and grow as a UF up-and-comer.
Oh. How do you like that introduction, Zach?
Not too bad. I only got a little while more before I go back to Gainesville, so I got to get everything I can.
What do you got, baby? What do you got?
All right, my first one, what is the best or your favorite sporting event you've ever been to, NFL or other sport, favorite sporting event you've ever been to?
Ooh. That's a good one.
That's strong. I think the Final Four. I love the Final
in
Four.
In St. Pete?
No, in your beautiful city of Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh.
League, 1988, I believe.
Danny Manning?
Danny Manning beats Oklahoma. Billy Tubbs.
Billy Tubbs, yeah.
That is a very good Oklahoma team.
Very good.
Very good. Mookie Blaylock.
Mm-hmm.
They had a couple of good big men. And
who was the guy that went to the Bulls? They thought he was going to be
the next
big
man. Wayman Tisdale. Yeah, Wayman Tisdale. Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, he was on that team, wasn't he?
And Harvey Grant, I think, was the third guy.
There was another. Wasn't there a guy, I can't think of his name, he was a bust. The Bulls signed him or drafted him first round as center.
Anyway, it was an excellent Oklahoma team. And you know who was, you know who coached Kansas and Danny Manning? Larry Brown.
Oh.
The Nomad, Larry Brown. I love the atmosphere. I went to Allen Fieldhouse the day before the game, and it was, you know, it was empty. And it
was it Allen Fieldhouse?
Yeah, I think it was Allen Fieldhouse. In Lawrence, Kansas. I went to Lawrence,
yeah,
Kansas.
Yeah, that's a suburb of Kansas City. That's where university
and,
is,
And, you know, there was a janitor there, and he was showing me around. And then I beat him in one-on-one, 11-9. I felt like $1 million. The guy was 87 years old, but that's all right. I love the atmosphere of a Final Four. I think it's kind of unmatched in sports. Next, baby.
Right. We're so close to training camp. We're getting there. Ryan Griffin is back yet again. Do you think he has any shot whatsoever to claim the number two quarterback job from Blaine Gabbert?
Let's not waste any time here. The answer is no. What's your third question, Zach?
Hey, real quick.
Never thrown an NFL pass, Lee. Never thrown an NFL pass. And you know how Arians feels about Gabbert. He trusts him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't trust him, but he trusts him.
Real quick, the answer, the player I couldn't think of, Stacey King.
Stacey King, very good.
All right, Sage. What about as a kid? A sporting event as a kid that captured your imagination
going back to the big football game at PS 131. I had $6 riding on that game.
You and Al Michaels?
Me and Al Michaels.
Yeah. Boy, you know, 1944.
Well, I would say it was a disappointing game. It was the 71 I was going to college. I think I was a freshman. 71
Brooklyn College?
Yeah, the 71 NL playoff series. Pirates, excellent Pirate team. Clemente, all those guys.
Reds?
They ended up winning it. They beat the Orioles, I think, in the series. Anyway, they were playing my Giants. Game one.
Oh, they didn't play the Giants
game
in playoffs.
One, Gaylord Perry wins 5-4. I'm happy. Game two, Bob Robertson hits 3 home runs off this guy, John Cumberland. Pirates winning a rout. Game three, that's the one. I remember the date, October 5th, 1971. Ooh. I should have had a date, but I remember the date. Giants go to Three Rivers. Series tied 1-1. It was a best-of-five. Best-of-five. My man Marichal's pitching. He had to pitch the last game of the regular season to clinch the division. Mm-hmm. He was not available till game three.
So you're feeling good.
I'm feeling good. He's going against some clown named Bob Johnson. Nobody ever heard of this guy. Who was filling in for Nellie Bryles or somebody.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Giants lose 2-1. Eighth inning home run by Richie Hebner.
Yeah.
The grave digger.
Second beat,
yeah,
right?
I can still see the ball going over. Bobby Bonds was in right field.
Was he?
Barry's father.
Uh-huh.
And it just went over. The Giants lose 2-1. They lose game four. Series over. Kaufman in mourning.
Hebner.
Absolute mourning.
Kaufman in mourning.
Stuffed myself with pizza for a week.
Hebner, the guy who used to pull on his shirt before every swing.
Yeah. Richie Hebner. That was a very good Pittsburgh team. Strong team.
Yeah.
Sage, quick question. Yeah. Now, when you watch this game, are you in a bar or are you snuggled up on the couch with Oscar the Cat?
Well,
Oscar the Cat.
I should have been going to my Brooklyn College classes, cut my classes, games on television, Kurt Gowdy, I think, doing the game.
Yeah.
Black and white television, and with the rabbit ears.
Yeah.
But you know what? The picture was clear enough for me to see that ball go over Bobby Bonds.
I'll
never forget that image.
That was Clemente's second last.
That's my image, like you're Rachel Watson. That's my image.
And Clemente, what, about 3 months later, was gone.
And the series was Clemente's series. He owned the 71 series.
And that was his last game.
And I believe that was right.
Yeah, and the plane crash. On New Year's Eve, was it?
It was New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
On a humanitarian mission. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, Ira, our thanks to Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon, Buffalo Wild Wings, and Sage. The fans will continue to listen to you on all the podcast platforms and right at joebucksfan.com. And as Bucks Nation is now 2 weeks from the start of training camp, 2 weeks and a couple of days, but it's 2 weeks away, leave them in 30 seconds with your Buccaneers wisdom.
All right, I'll be happy. And as far as Buck training camp, 2 weeks, Lee, it's right around the corner. Right around the corner. Rookies report. Who cares about that? I'll tell you who cares about it. Buck fans, you know why?
Yeah.
Rookies are going to play a central role in the resurrection of the 2019 Bucks. See ya.